Are you a loner or a groupie and are you enjoy your run? Back to take it easy, you're shooting a friend a gun. Whatever your ability is, it's a place to be. So welcome to the world that fights like run community. If you're 17, 24, pushing 82, come along, join us, this is the place for you. Welcome to the world that fights like run community. Welcome to the world that fights like run community.
Well, I'll tell you something, guys. These Mondays and Thursdays are coming round quicker than a hiccup, but we are very happy to be back in your eardrums, as always, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, let's try that again. Welcome to Series 14, Episode, six of the What the Fartlek podcast. My name is Rob.
And I'm Matt.
That nearly all fell apart, Matthew Taylor, didn't it?
It did. You did a tiny dance on it.
I did a duh. Maybe after a couple of drinks, pal. Maybe after a couple of drinks. How are you?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Did you miss me on Thursday?
Of course.
I missed you guys as well.
Yeah, very much.
And Lou. And Lou. She's not here today, so.
She's not. We've had to keep you separate, haven't we? It's like this is happening more and more often. She's on Thursdays and you're on Mondays because I don't know. You're just in the same room. It just explodes.
I get to see her Thursday, so it should be good.
Yeah, you're back, aren't you, next week? Good, good, good. It's not just me and you, though, having a little conflap before the main event. Best calves in Clitheroe. John Pickup's in the background. How are we doing, JP?
Hi, boys. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you two?
Yes, good, good, thank you. It's Saturday we're recording, so we're recovering from an exciting day of football across Premier League and Championship, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're switching gears. And we're getting into some running content. Matty Taylor, why don't you tell us about our guest today?
Yeah, chatting to the absolutely awesome Callum Elson, international athlete and coach. He's a British middle distance runner. Did the mile at the championships in 3:56, I think it is. Incredible athlete. Gone through quite a lot. He was there in Brussels with Abby Donnelly as well. And Poppy Tank, which is he talked about in the chat. It's a great chat. And he also suffered with a bit of a setback in Glasgow this year. Talked about all that. Got a serious injury. So, but he's quite a positive person, positive chat. And it is good. And it makes you feel warm because he doesn't feel any negative about being injured and stuff like that. So, yeah, awesome chat.
Yeah, really cool. Looking forward to chatting to him. And, of course, also talking about The Distance Project, which is his YouTube channel, his brand that he's looking to build and expand. And he talks quite a lot about how he's had to diversify and move around that since his injury. Just a bit quick trigger warning before we get there. It's a bit gross what happened. So
I remember sitting downstairs. We don't know, watching it on the telly. I remember it happening. And it did look a bit... A bit gross, yeah.
Impaled. We won't go into that in any more detail. But what we are going to talk about, boys, before we get over to the main event, of course, Callum is the reason we're here today. But injury is a key part of that conversation. And it's not something any of us are strangers to. And two of us are going through at the moment, as I've just discovered today. Callum talks really, really well about the power of positivity and about switching a negative into a positive and always looking for how you can progress and move forward. But being injured's shit in it. Let's be dead honest. JP, you're still struggling with your hammy from Manchester. How's that going?
Yeah, I think acceptance has set in now and I'm just trying to do what I can. So doing a bit of old strength training, getting a bit of yoga in there and I've got the bike out, which my arse is still sore. From yesterday,
and then he got on the bike.
But it's really frustrating. You want to get out and do this thing that you love doing, but when you can, it's tough to take, isn't it?
Yeah, agreed. And Matt, you're surprisingly not injured for somebody who is compulsively injured.
Don't jinx it.
You've got about a year without getting properly hurt, haven't you?
Yeah, I had a bit of a niggle during this marathon block. Obviously, went to the physio and stuff and got it sourced and got it checked. So, but yeah, touch wood, everything seems to be going all right. I keep getting a little bit of a like twinge in my calf that I keep stretching out through the what the physio said. But hopefully, everything's going swimmingly. I was just concerned with the rest that I've had over like few weeks from not running. The legs feel stronger as well, so All good fun. I'm not bragging. I know you guys are suffering. I know you're dealing with the injuries and stuff. So it's hard to sit here and say all this while you two are struggling.
Yeah, no, it's good to hear though, because I said it jokingly, but you are chronically injured. Like for like the 4 years we've been doing this podcast, you do pick one up every 6 months. So you're doing something differently, aren't you? Is it maybe the fact that you've got a bit more structure to plan? You're not good in it every single session. Is there a recipe to your success, or do you think it's just dumb luck?
Probably dumb luck. I mean, you talk about this plan, but now we're not getting no plan. I'm not with Jack anymore, so plan's gone out the window, and it's just I'll be injured next week.
Yeah, a couple of weeks, torn something.
But what about you, Rob? Because you've gone kind of back to back. It's been a bit of a shit time, hasn't it?
So basically, I mean, bear in mind, this isn't a medically diagnosed condition. I've not been to a physio. I might still go to see the physio. I'm going to see how it goes in the next couple of weeks. But I'm getting what I think is shin splints in my left foot. So for those of you who don't know, in the July of last year, I tore my AFTL, which is a tiny little tendon that sits just between your foot and your bottom of your ankle, on my right foot, which kept me out for about 6-7 months. And when I came back to running, I was told it'll still be stiff, there's loads of scar tissue, but it's fine. You're not going to do any of anything running on it helps, because it'll be sore, but you're strengthening the muscle, you're breaking down the scar tissue. So I've been out and I've started running, and I've not done anything crazy. I've done like six, seven miles at most, but some park runs. I've put a little bit of an effort in here there where I can, just enjoying running a little bit. But I think what I've done is I've been compensating on my left-hand side, because my foot is, and it is stiff. That's what she said. It's really kind of like that motion of moving your foot up towards your shin isn't comfortable. And maybe I've neglected the strength and the physio exercises that I've been given, because once I get back out running, I was like, cool, I can run. It's probably not been rehabbed fully. So I think I've been leaning on my left and I've been compensating. And now it's through last three runs I've been on. So Bushy last weekend, part run with Paulie today, and then a run I went on just after Manchester has been agony. I think it's probably the only way to describe it. Real, I should have stopped really, but you know, we're at Penistone Park Run, and we're halfway up the TPT, and it's like, I've got to get back, so I might as well, I'd rather run it than walk it, I'll get back quicker. But yeah, it was sore and very swollen, like almost like a lump in the lower shin on the outside. So I think it's shin splints or something similar. So I'm just going to take my time and I'm going to rehab it and do all the exercises that Dr. Google says, and strength and conditioning and stretch, I think, is another big one. I've had shin splints before, years and years and years ago, so it's a similar pain to that. So that's why I think that's what it is. And then just tap, knock the running on the head for a bit. But it's dead frustrating, isn't it? Because it's like, I feel a bit like, I'm trying to be dead positive about it, but I feel like I've kind of done my time on the sidelines. It's like I had 7 months out, and I'm like, I just want to have a run. Can't do nothing about it. I can't make it go away, can I? So positive forward momentum, I guess.
I think you've got to actually take your own advice though now. You've got to do the strength work.
Yeah, I know. It's me. I stop start all the time, don't I? And I think that, again, not to get too much into the old personal life, but you know, I am going through a redundancy at work at the moment, and that's been pretty stressful. But I'm about 2 weeks out from being made redundant, and I've decided to take a little bit of time before I look for the next job. So there is a little bit of time in the day that I'm going to have to really commit to stretching, strength training, and just rehabbing it, without, you know, having to worry about work and all that other stressful stuff. So fingers crossed, I'm not going to be on the shelf for long, but we'll see, shall we?
I think it's not only you that neglect it. I think we're all guilty of it. We all said it past it. I mean, we started it during this marathon plan, but by the end of it, I think me and Neil both said that the last 5 or 6 weeks we knocked it on and everybody didn't do any. So we're all guilty of that. So maybe it gives us all...
That's the frustration, though, because I carried on doing it and I wouldn't want to get injured. I didn't strengthen that bit, so lessons learned, innit? You know, and I've been quite lucky. I've not been on the shelf for a good few years now, and you know, my hamstring really is an old football injury that just seems to have come back. And you know, I just know that I'm gonna have to suck it up and just get on with it now and come back stronger, hopefully.
No, hopefully about it, absolutely. We can rebuild and we have the technology. I'm sure we'll get there, both of us. And hopefully Matt doesn't fall in any potholes in the meantime. right then, boys, should we get over and have a chat to Callum Elson, someone who's probably dealing with a much worse injury, can I say, than me and JP have got, in a much more positive light than the sulking twins here. Shall we go and see what Callum's all about, learn a bit about his story and what he's up to coping with injury?
Let's do it.
Now then, you lot, these chats are at their best when we talk to truly inspirational athletes. Now, whether that's an elite at the top of their game or a brand new runner battling towards a personal goal, running is, of course, for everyone. And the entire purpose of these conversations is to break down barriers and bring everyone under its umbrella. So with that in mind, today we're talking to a man who embodies just that, an international athlete and run coach who, through the Distance Project, is using his experience to help others achieve their goals. And we meet him at a crossroads in life, his upward trajectory with Olympic dreams in mind, paused cruelly by an injury earlier this year. But if you're familiar with his work, you'll know he's not one to dwell as he embarks on his recovery, proving that comeback is indeed bigger than setback. We're going to talk about that journey into a relationship with running, how he's getting on with being on the shelf, and what the future holds. But most importantly, let's just get to know a good dude. Today I'm joined by Callum Elson. Callum, how are we doing, mate?
Mate, that's the best intro I think I've ever had. That's quality.
Start strong.
If the podcast ends now, it's been a good episode. That was remarkable.
We'll clip it.
No, I'm all good, mate. How are you?
Good, yeah. Living the dream, man. I'm on a bit of what I said before we start recording. Bit of a London come down, but all gravy. All gravy. Listen, it's not about me. I want to talk about you. And we've got a very limited amount of time to do so. I want to hear all about the running journey. I want to hear about the Olympic dreams. I want to hear about where we're up to now, what's in plan for the future. Should we start chronologically? Should we take it back to the beginning? Have you... I assume, given the standard that you've set and what you can achieve, that running, athletics, always been a part of your life?
Not as much as you might imagine, to be honest. Without going into the massive granular details, sporty as a kid, loved all sports, mainly football. Originally from Leeds, I live in Cambridge now, but from Leeds, dad's a massive Leeds fan, always played football, Sunday league, in and out of Leeds Academy and county football and all that sort of stuff, up until, you know, I was... 15, 16, I was very much that kid of the mindset of like, oh, obviously I want to do well at school and stuff like that, but I'll be a footballer, you know, that's like kind of what I want to do. Obviously at that age, you've got the pre-season, the off-season, whatever you want to call it, in the summer where you're obviously not going training 3-4 times a week like you would. So I'd go down and, you know, do a bit of running, just like run around the block, or, you know, I was that kid where like your parents would be like, oh, time you to run around the park and see what you can do. Do you know what I mean? Just make up the time as you get back sort of thing. So I was always active in like kind of into running. As I was a little bit older, when I was in secondary school, I'd go and do the local schools cross country. I think just because I was a keen kid and I played the football team, did the other sports, they were like, oh, we've got a cross country league on a Saturday, like if you want to go down. But I'd do it like I'd play a football match on a Saturday morning, get in the car and drive there and start the cross country race with like mud on my knees still, or vice versa. I'd be arriving late at football, putting my shin pads on, being from the cross country race. So it was very much just from being keen, wasn't very good at, like, relatively speaking, didn't, you know, win races and do stuff like that. And when I went to university, I went to Durham, I kind of thought to myself, I'll try and take running a bit more seriously and, you know, maybe try and join the local running club. And when I'm back from uni, it'll be a good way to keep fit because I'm not playing football. And, you know, I was starting to watch running on TV and I understand it and I've always liked it. So I'd come back in the Christmas holidays when you're getting sort of 4 or 5 weeks off at uni, and same in the summer when you got 3 months off. Go down to a local running club, and that's the first time I've done interval sessions, like learned a bit more about running, seen what people are wearing with shoes and all that sort of stuff. And the progress I made, like any beginner that's listening to this, when you first start running, you get the running bug, you just progress, like you get PB every week if you want to, you know what I mean? And you're getting so motivated by your PBs that you just keep doing it. So I think one of the summers when I was probably 18, I think I ran kind of like 15:30 or 15 summit for 5k, and for me and wow. All the people in the running club were like, oh, you should stop playing football, like that's, you know, you've really got talent and whatever. And obviously people say stuff, but you never quite know. There wasn't any juniors in the club. I was kind of like the token like 18-year-old that was there. It was my very local club, amateur focus, and it was kind of like, oh well, yeah, I'm all right, but like I still prefer football. And to be honest, at that point I enjoyed the camaraderie and like of the going on the bus to football, having a good group of mates, having a laugh. Like I wasn't probably mature enough to like go out for a run by myself and think this is really fun or I need the headspace or whatever. I just liked having a laugh with the lads. So I kept playing football at uni and still I'd repeat the pattern for about 3 years. I'd go back, get a little bit better in the summer, and then I'd come back, right, football 3-4 times a week, same with Christmas, and gradually do more races. And I did some like of the like county schools and English schools cross country and stuff like that. But it was in my final year at uni, which aligned with COVID. It was 2020, I think, when I was supposed to, when I graduated, when the football season just went like, yeah, all right, it has to stop. So we couldn't go training, we couldn't play. So I was like, oh well, I'll just do what I've been doing in the so I'll just start running and take it a bit more seriously. And I literally just replaced every training session I had scheduled with a run or an interval session or a basic thing. And again, that trajectory that I went on of just gradually training and doing stuff kind of took off. And I basically thought, actually, there is no football I can play now. So rather than just 2 or 3 months of running, I've probably done 9 months in a row of running and actually got to a pretty decent level. I think I got down to about 14, I think I ran about 14:30 or something. So I took another big chunk off my 5K. At this point, all I'm doing is 5K because that's just the standard distance people do. And it was at that point where I'd graduated and I was thinking, like, okay, what do I want to do? Go get a graduate job, do whatever, or through a long story, but essentially I got an opportunity to go to America on an athletic scholarship because a guy just looked at me and he said, you're telling me you've not really done any training and you've run 14:30 and you've been playing football and it's kind of a bit of natural talent? And I was like, well, yeah, pretty much. And he was like, right, if you want to come and do your master's, we can fund it for you. You'll have it only have a year because it's been COVID, but you can come for a year. You know, I think you'll be really good, like, have a go at it. And I went there, met my coach, who's still my coach to this day. And yeah, progressed massively. And it was from there that everything essentially started and I've become a runner kind of 4 or 5 years later.
Yeah. Was it a really sharp kind of turning point? So when, you know, you get this opportunity, when running suddenly becomes in the COVID period a focus because there isn't an option of football, did you ever go back to footy or was there just like a real, okay, that bit's done now and this is what I'm going to focus on 100%?
Yeah, I think that was the point where, I, to be honest, I knew the whole time it wasn't football that was keeping me playing football. It was all my best mates at uni. And like, I always looked at uni as like, that's the 3 or 4 years where I'm never going to get that unique experience again. Like, I'm not going to be a professional footballer after this year. I might play some semi-pro and still enjoy it and whatever, but I'm not going to actually make it at that point. I think the running trajectory was on such a one that I was like, as I became more involved with running and understood the landscape a little bit, I was like, well, actually, like, if I'm already ranked, I don't know, arbitrary number, top 50 or top 100 in the UK and I've just started doing this, or I'm not part of a club, or I'm only running 4 times a week, not 7 times or whatever. And like I said, with the addiction thing, the more you do something and you start doing your sessions a bit quicker and then you go to the track and you realize that's quite fun and gradually do more, it was a perfect storm, basically. Like, running being like, all right, that's kind of done now, you're finished, you've left your mates, what are you going to do next? Don't really know what I want to do as a career. Got an opportunity to go to America, great. And by the time I came back from America, I was, you know, thinking about how do I become professional. You know, I was like, I've improved so much. It's like, okay, what do I need to do to get a contract? Like, what steps can I get through to that? And, you know, that's how it opened up some sort of different opportunities in the next chapter.
And just before we move on to that next chapter, which I really want to spend a bit of time doing, can we just focus on kind of like headspace? Because I find this really interesting, right? So you've basically explained that, yeah, I mean, when I say you're not at a top level footballer, you obviously were good enough to be, you know, picked and doing it and enjoying it and I presume intramural or whatever, inter university level. You've said though that for you that was all about camaraderie, right? The thing that kept you going was you're with your pals. It's about being in it together. You know, football as a team sport is exactly that. Running, I appreciate that, you know, your teammates, your running club, there is a level of camaraderie there. There is a community there. But when you're at the level that you're aspiring to get to, or that you identify immediately, actually, I think I can push on to this. It's incredibly lonely because ultimately it's you against the world, isn't it? You're wanting to be better than everybody else. How did you find that transition?
Yeah, I guess it just came naturally with me growing up and like changing as a person, to be honest. Like, outside of it, like, when I look back now, like, the stuff that I really enjoy now, I enjoy just like self-improvement just generally. Like, I like learning a new thing or challenging myself doing this, or I like to be stimulated. I'm that guy that when you're on holiday, I can't just like lie on the sun lounger. I'm like doing a crossword when I'm on the sun lounger or something. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, how can I like do something? Do you know what I mean? I've quite got that sort of personality. So I think, to be honest, when it was COVID and lockdown, it's like there's not that much you could really do with other people, so you didn't really have the thing of like, oh, I wish I was having fun with people doing this. It was like you had to kind of accept that. So instead, the stimulus came from, okay, I'm gonna do 10 times 2 minutes, and I'm going to see if I can run the 2 minute reps faster than I could last time, or I'm going to do a lap of the park. Can I do it in 8 minutes rather than last time I did it in 9 or whatever? And that sort of, that battle with myself was actually very enjoyable. And I was actually like, oh, I'm actually taking a lot from this. And again, I must stress, like, I was on such a trajectory of always doing better that I didn't really have many moments where I wouldn't go to the park and I was a bit slower than last time, or I didn't have those battles where it was like, okay, I've plateaued for 6 months now, this is a real struggle, do I love running or do I not? I kind of was fueled by constantly improving. And to be honest, like, I'm as of recording, I'm injured, but up until I got an injury a few months ago, I still was very much on that trajectory, albeit with far higher stakes and on bigger stages, and it means a bit more sort of emotionally, financially, etc. But it's still the same thing. When you're doing well, and like people that did London Marathon yesterday, if they got a PB, the week that they're having off now of rest, they'll be buzzing to get back training, so motivated for the next session. They'll be like, oh, I can't wait to smash it, I'm going to sign up for another one. You know, I'm sure some people that didn't do well will feel like that, but also a lot of people will really be enjoying the rest and being like, oh yeah, you know, that marathon was bloody tough. Like, I'm just, it's taken me a few weeks to get enthusiastic about running again. So whatever level you're at, I do think that performance and doing well naturally just fuels your own enthusiasm and motivation and stuff like that. So I did get very lucky in the sense that my own kind of talent, in a way, dragged me through the potential other battles that people would have had to go that maybe it didn't come as naturally to them.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about upward trajectory then. So ultimately, we've got a movement that we're going to get to now from the time period we're speaking about, you know, running becomes the thing, it becomes the focus, to the injury, effectively, at the start of this year. So let's talk about that time period in between. So 1500 meters was the distance. Was that always the distance? How did we get there?
Yeah, it's funny because, like, if people don't know or whatever, my Instagram handle is actually The Distance Project. And, you know, we create content on YouTube now under The Distance Project. And that account I actually created during lockdown before I was going to America. I was like, it was a mixture of, I want some accountability for myself, because remember, I don't have the coach at football anymore to be like, you're on the bench if you don't come training. It's me. I choose if I want to do the training or not. So I thought, oh, it'd be good accountability. I'll make a page and I'll like share some of the sessions I'm doing and essentially just like bring people along on like the progress journey. Obviously, at this point, I've got no idea it's going to end up with me representing GB doing all this stuff. So it looks so well meticulously planned and strategic in hindsight. But like, it was just lockdown, make an Instagram account. Like, that'll be a bit of fun, bit of community, stuff like that. But the reason it was called The Distance Project is because everything I was doing was like, 5K was like the very shortest race I'd ever done. Mm-hmm. You know, it would all be 10K, or like, if you look back through my results, I've got some really random, like Humber Bridge half marathon, or like I've got random races that I've just done because I was like, I didn't come from a track background as a junior where your parents take you and you do 800 meters or pole vault or whatever. I just signed up for road races that I could do because I was over 18. I was like, I'll just do it. So it was only when I was in America that they do an indoor track season where the longest event on the indoor track is 3,000 meters. So when you're on a scholarship, they want you to maximize the amount of points you can get. So they go, right, you're definitely doing cross country, you're definitely doing indoor track, you're definitely doing outdoor. So when it came to indoor, it was like, right, what event are you going to do? And my coach was like, right, we'll start the season, just do a mile, because it's a mile or 3K. We'll just do it and then we'll build up to the 3K. And that was always the plan. And I can't remember exactly what I ran, but I did the first mile and I basically exceeded all expectation. He was like, right, I think we could be onto something here. And then in my third, it was only my third mile race where I ran sub-4 for the mile and was like a big, you know, obviously that's like a quantifiable measure that like normal, quote unquote, normal people understand, i.e. like my dad that doesn't know much about running, he understands.
It's the 4 minute mile, isn't it? It's the
It translates quite well. So I think that was the bit where in my head I was like, oh, that I know that's good. Like objectively, I know that shows a level of ability, and you can see how many Brits have done it, and it's like, wow, so I'm the whatever 200th person ever to do that in Britain. That's like pretty good actually. And from there is where I've focused purely on middle distance, with the ethos being that like, focus on middle distance while you're a bit younger, use all that speed and everything you've got. You can always go up the distance and build the strength. And if anything, you need that a little bit later on, rather than doing it the other way around. So that's why I've been 1500 meter kind of 5K-ish based for the last, 2022, I think, February 2022. So the last 2 years or so. But yeah, I still do plenty of cross country, which is like 10K, 12K, stuff like that. And I do enjoy some of the longer stuff. But yeah, for now, he's trying to crack this and sort of get to a level I'm happy with before I then move up.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned cross country. We had a couple of fellow Team GB athletes on last series. Abby Donnelly joined us, as did Poppy Tank. And they both talk about the the part that cross-country plays in that training when you are a middle-distance runner. What is it about cross-country in your eyes that just makes it such an integral part of that training routine?
Yeah, I know Abby and Poppy both quite well. I had a long flight to Australia with them both, actually. And, that just shows you, because like in Abby's case, for example, she like really excels over the half marathon and 10K, and like she is a distance focused athlete, not to say she couldn't do a good 1500, but for her cross country kind of it's similar. It mirrors the strength focused event. For me, it's way more of a, I still want to do well, but it's way more of a training tool in the sense that the more strength I can build up from a physical point of view, testing myself over longer distances, more aerobic based, just in theory, the stronger I am. Once you then sprinkle in your speed and your VO2 max work and your lactate work, then ideally, you know, or logically, you should be able to run faster for longer, which is essentially the aim of 1500. But I think more than that for cross country, there's a underrated mental element of it where it's like you've got to turn up in normally bad conditions, a course you don't really know that's perfect, against people who that's their like specialist thing, they're training to peak for that time, whereas you're concerned on the summer. Everything's kind of stacked against you and you've got to just pull through and get it done. And there's enough time in that 30-minute race that you want to stop about a million times and you just got to get through it. So I think that's underrated. And then also, because time is irrelevant, it's all about racing and your racing brain. So like, okay, am I going faster up this hill than this guy, but does he catch me on the downhill? Okay, like how can I use that to my advantage, or how can I make sure that that doesn't affect me? And there is a lot of racing tactics that you can learn from cross country, I think, when people do it at a young age, it does help, because when you watch kind of the under eights or whatever, you see they all just absolutely bomb off as quick as they can, and then you know they end up walking back pretty much, and it's only through doing that trial and error that they eventually learn, okay, pacing yourself is important, or I should sprint at this time. And you know, there's definitely mental elements as well, I think, that you can learn from it.
Yeah, super, super interesting. Let's talk about how we got to this year then. So 1500. Actually, before we do that, if you don't mind, can we just focus in on America?
Yeah, yeah.
Different world, isn't it, the collegiate system? How was your experience of it?
Yeah, it's totally different. And a lot, since I've got back, actually, a lot of the work I've done, and I've got some future plans to kind of formalise it a little bit, but I try and give as much advice as I can to younger people that are looking to go, either people that have done an undergrad degree here and then thinking of going for their masters, or people that are going straight from school, because in many ways it make or break people, in the sense that it's an awesome opportunity to experience a new way of living, often get your tuition for free or at a massively discounted rate, which obviously, you know, a bit political, but that's fantastic, like for you to be able to get that, and access to facilities and things like that generally are better. Yeah. But the way I always describe to people is like, you don't always see the complete true colors of a situation, right? So like when I went, the only thing I'd seen about America was like these things on YouTube of like Oregon Stadium, you know, or like, you know, Florida State, where they've got a bloody swimming pool on a rooftop or whatever. And you think everything's going to be spring break and like, wow, this is going to be amazing. Obviously, for some schools, that probably is the case. And it is that kind of, you know, that American movie type thing that you've seen.
I was going to say '90s teen movie type.
Exactly. But for obviously a lot of schools, it's way smaller. It might be more rural. The weather might not be exactly what you're imagining it to be. That the facilities and the funding or the travel opportunities might not quite be there. That there is a massive mix. And I probably fell in. Remember the story I gave, right? I didn't really know anything about running. It wasn't like I was shopping around or I had a coach to say like, oh, let's chat to these good unis. They've got good coaches. It was like, this has fallen on my lap. Cool, I'll just take it. Parents are like, yeah, great, give it a shot. Like, it's only a year, why not, sort of thing. And I fell in the middle ground where the uni, you know, had amazing things. So like I said, I met the coach that I still have now, who, it doesn't work there anymore, but like we've stayed in touch and still coaches me, got me to national best and stuff. So fantastic. If I didn't go, never would have met him. Same with some of the friends that I've met and that sort of thing. And I did get some good opportunities to go and do races and things like that. But on the other side of things, it was like, okay, we didn't have an indoor track. We didn't have these sort of facilities. The things that, again, in my stereotype of America, I've imagined I'm going to have all of this stuff and it's going to be all this kit drop and these free shoes and all this sort of stuff. And it wasn't all quite there. You see what I mean? So I do always say to people, and I always say to parents as well, I'm like, just do your complete research. And I can speak from, like, luckily I came out well from it, but equally it could have been totally wrong. I could have hated it and it wouldn't have not been great, and I might have had a bad coach and that sort of stuff. So doing your research is really important. But one thing it did teach me was like racing, because you race so much when you're there, especially if you're on a scholarship, because they want to get your money, their money's worth out of you. you are racing a lot. You're doing heats and finals, and you might be doing two events in a weekend and all sorts of stuff. So in terms of me having almost like a crash course, if you will, going from being behind other people where I'd done way less running, I went to America and it was like, boom, you're doing all these races. I had an intense, basically, learning period of like, this is how running works. This is the crap bit, the good bit, when it's hard, when it's not. So I was kind of a bit more equipped when I got back, and I had a lot of experiences to draw on. So in championships, when you've got to get through heats and finals and negotiate tactics and stuff, I'm pretty good at that, I would say, now, relative to some other athletes that maybe haven't had the experience of doing championships and stuff. Because in America, that's pretty much, this, you know, they make up one that you've got to do every couple of weeks, basically. There's some sort of like random fake trophy you're fighting for. So
it's all part of the building toolkit, isn't it? Let's get to this year then. So I alluded to it just a little bit earlier. We have touched on it as we've gone. So ultimately, we know, I've spoiled that we're going to get to an injury, which is where we are now, right? But you had very, very big dreams of taking this skill that you've acquired, that you've realised, that you've then honed, that you've kind of got yourself a specialty in, and then you're starting to build on that trajectory. How close, in your opinion, do you think you were to going to the Olympics?
This year, I think it's difficult. So the 1500 meter running is the strongest it's probably ever been. And you're going back to like your Kramer, Vetco eras to get anything similar to what we've got now. And obviously everyone knows it's been popularized by Josh Kerr most recently, and obviously Jake Whiteman a couple of years ago, of how strong we are. So on paper you go, okay, well, you're maybe I was ranked sixth at the time, something like that. And they were only taking three people. So you look at that odds and you say, well, your odds aren't great. But depending on how much people know about the selection, the very cutthroat thing about the selection we have in the UK is it's almost like first past the post, in the sense that it doesn't matter what you've done before, as long as you've got under that qualifying time and you have that to your name, it is pretty much all about how you perform at the British Championships as to whether you go or not. So the unfortunate reality this year could be, and touch wood for his sake, this doesn't happen. Josh Kerr obviously is arguably the best in the world right now. If he unfortunately trips over in that British final and he doesn't make the top two, he might not be selected to go to the Olympics, even though everything, obviously he should go, right? But it's so cutthroat that you couldn't make it. And I pride myself on my ability to, as I think I've proven in the past without being big-headed, I think I'm good at racing on the big stage. And when it matters, I can pull something out of my arse sometimes. When I'm not really supposed to do that well, I can do quite well. So I think I had my best ever indoor season. I ran a 3:53 mile, like, 2 weeks before I ended up getting injured. So that's like the seventh fastest British mile of all time indoors.
Wow.
I was tracking pretty well, I think, to get the Olympic qualifying time. Obviously, it's all ifs, ands and buts. And then, yeah, I would have turned up to the champs, very long shot. No one's putting my name on the list. But there would have been six or seven of us that all would have had to have a big burn up in that final. And could I have squeaked into the top two or three? Like, I would never go into a race if I didn't think I could, you know? So it's one of those things where you never quite know. But we'll have to wait a few years to find out.
Absolutely. Wayne Gretzky, wasn't it? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Talk to me about what happened then. So, you know, I'm not going to try and paraphrase it myself. Talk to me about how we got from, I'm backing myself, I reckon.
Yeah.
No one else is saying it. I've got an Olympic dream, to in a pot now thinking about recovery.
Yeah, it's difficult. So I ran a mile in Boston. My goal for the indoor season was, last year I didn't do any indoor racing. I just focused on cross country, and I did European cross champs, world cross champs, like some good GB bests, and it set me up well for the summer. But this year I thought, with it being an Olympic year and to try and get right up to that level, I do need to take a few more risks to try and really put myself in a good position. And one of those risks that I thought was worth taking was doing an indoor season, simply because, again, without getting into all the details, when you race indoors, you get a certain amount of world ranking points. The higher you are in the rankings, when it comes around to the summer, if you're a race organizer and you've only got 10 spots on your start list, you're trying to accept guys that are top in the rankings.
Yeah.
So my goal was to do really well in the indoors, get myself up the rankings, get a really good spot in a race outdoors, hopefully get the Olympic time, and then it's done and dusted. Faster the race, the better chances you've got of running fast. So did a few indoor races, didn't run that well in the first two. Then I went to Boston. I just thought, right, one last big chance. Ran under the world qualifying time, which was great, with the 3:53 mile. Went to the British Championships the week after. Needed to finish in the top two to qualify. Came second, just about. everything's going well and thinking, right, qualified for first major championships on the track, like, brilliant. In Glasgow, in front of a home crowd as well, even better. It's on BBC Two, everyone's going to watch it. Warm-up's great, everything's fine. And then two laps into the race, a complete freak accident. Like, I get spiked quite often, like, quite high up my legs, like, on your knees and stuff. It's just a natural thing of running that close to people. But this freak accident that's happened is a guy that's running behind me. And if anyone's squeamish or anything, I know this is audio, and it doesn't really matter. But
trigger warning.
Yeah, trigger warning for anyone who's been through this freak accident. The guy's foot, again, I'm using my hands to describe this. I realise they can't see this. But the guy behind me essentially has come down and has stood on the back of my heel. But as you can imagine, we're wearing 6mm spikes that are like razor sharp. You're in the World Championship heat. Like, you're going to use your best shoes possible. So he stood on the back of my Achilles. And rather than it just being like standing on my shoe or my foot, it's by such small fractions, like it, almost millimeter perfect, his spike has sliced through into my Achilles tendon. So it's sliced into my tendon. I've obviously not known what's happened at the time. And obviously I'm landing on the foot so I've taken a few extra steps and I feel this now it's been described to me. Apparently it's like the complete normal thing, but I essentially feel what is like cramp in my calf and think, maybe I've just landed a bit weirdly. It might be one of those kind of little spasms where you take a few more steps and you run it off sort of thing. So I take a couple more steps and then I'm like, oh, this is way worse than it is. Went down and then I looked at my ankle. I could just see like blood pouring out of my shoe essentially. So they had to wheel me out of the stadium on a wheelchair. BBC, not my finest moment, but at least you're going to go out in style. Yeah, exactly. Got it stitched up immediately because the doctor was just like, look, this is pretty deep. At the time, I think they probably knew straight away, but obviously in that moment, they don't want to tell you because it's such a long-term injury. So he said, look, it is a pretty deep flesh wound. Like, I'm going to have to stitch you up here and then, like, before you leave the stadium because, like, you're just bleeding everywhere, basically. So stitched it up. Luckily, obviously, I've still got all that adrenaline in me and I'm all good. Went for an MRI scan straight away the next day. Got the results either later that day or the day after, the Monday. And the physio said to me, he's basically like, yeah, you've got a tear, a partial tear in your Achilles tendon. So he said, I can't tell you exactly what's going to happen. Don't know if you're going to need surgery or what. But he said, it's better to know the timelines from the outset. It's probably going to be 6 months, 7 months before you can run again. You're looking at like at least a year probably before you race again. So from that moment, I didn't know the specifics of what I'd need done, or I didn't know I was going to need surgery and all of that extra stuff. But I was basically like, wow, that's like pretty serious. Like, I've been stood on a million times in my life, especially playing football. And that's definitely the worst I've had it.
Given what you've said a little bit earlier, you know, you've been on this upward trajectory with running since 2020, let's say, when COVID happened, and it has been PBs, it has been notoriety, it has been building your brand and your image and your capability and all that good stuff. It's all been positive. How does that feel when you hit that? I know it's not a performance plateau, but it's a bloody big roadblock, isn't it?
Yeah, it's brutal. Yeah, it is brutal. And like, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't like incredibly frustrated. Weirdly, like the first two or three days, like I wasn't, as you'd maybe imagine, like sat in my room being like, oh, this is terrible. But like, because I had the rest of the championships there, and I'm the sort of person where like I was trying to think, like, so Adam Fogg was on my team. He was also there for the 1500 meters. And I was thinking, if he made it through to the final. So I was thinking, if this was the other way around, I wouldn't want Adam moping around, like everyone being feeling sorry for him and being like that. The best thing I can do as a teammate is like, be buzzing for Adam, make sure he's up for it and he's like confident, and like, you don't want me moping around being like, oh yeah, this is so sad for me, whatever. So and the final wasn't until the last day, almost near the end. So for the full weekend, I'm still going to the stadium, watching athletics, like I'm still a fan, cheering on the rest of the Brits in the team, and like, you know, being essentially there. Me and Adam have come to the championships together. The best thing I can do is like be a good mate in that situation. And it wasn't until I got back, I flew back, and then when I got home, I was like, normally I'm thinking like, all right, better like wash all my running clothes and pack my suitcase, like what training have I got next week, like better ring coach. And like, my suitcase just sat in the house for like 5 days, just unpacked like the whole week, because I was like, well, I don't need it, you know. And that's when it kind of hit me a little bit. I was like, I literally don't need any running clothes. I was like, all my left shoes, I don't need them. I was like, and it just sat there, and I was like, it took me ages to actually get the vest that I'd run in out, take the number off, you know, get the bloody spike out and like put that in the bin. And like, that's when I was a little bit like, shit, this is actually like, this is a really long injury. Like, because torn Achilles, and I'm not very medical, like, I don't really know the ins and outs of what that is, but it would be a quicker to heal from literally breaking my leg. And I know what I know what a broken bone's like. So I was like, wow, like, it's essentially like I've broken my leg here. But what one fantastic thing is, I'm on an athlete support scheme called TAS, which is like a government funded scheme for talented athletes. That's what they call it, not me, across all sports. And as part of that, you can access private medical up to a certain amount. So in terms of the treatment I had, the specialist surgeon that I was referred to, and knowing that that was going to be all funded, I think took a massive weight off my shoulders in terms of the pressure I would have been feeling if not. If I was thinking, right, wow, like all this shit's happened and I'm going to have to pay this amount to fix it, or do I go for the really expensive specialist, or do I do this? Like, I think that would have added a lot of stuff and probably built up a lot more pressure. But knowing it was all going to be sorted and I was pretty much in the best hands in terms of how quick the treatment had been, and that the best guy was going to, you know, put me to sleep and then cut my ankle open and sort it out within a couple of weeks, that was easier to deal with, because I could kind of process, right, got a bad injury. Have other people had this injury before? Yes, thousands of people have had it, albeit, you know, in different, slightly different scenarios. How many people have recovered from it? Most get back to doing elite sport. It just takes a long time. So I was like, right, I will be fine eventually. I'm going to be annoyed now, and then I'm going to just start go, right, no more being annoyed and moping around, just crack on with it. Like, get on the bike, do what you can, like, just move on. And to be honest, I'm doing surprisingly well. Like, I think I am anyway, based on time is going quite quick. Like, I'm in my eighth week now since I got injured, and like, the 2 months has flown by. Like, recalling the story now, it feels like I've only just done it, you know what I mean? Which I think is really nice. I never like to wish time away, and like, I want to make the most of stuff. But you know, if the next 2 months goes as quick as the last have, I'll almost be back running again. So yeah, it's going in the right direction.
Amazing. And I am very conscious of time, because I know you're a busy man, so I'll probably combine the next two questions. I'll combine the next. So I wanted to ask about the recovery process, and as an athlete at the level that you were competing at and that you were training at, it must be really difficult, mustn't it, to go from what is a very rigid, structured, routine driven life basically, to you're on the sidelines, and so it's like you said, you know, suddenly I've not got a kit to unpack because I've not got a race to go to. I guess if I push two of my questions together, how did you find that? And has the distance project and the YouTube stuff and the running community and the other things that you're investing your time in, has that been almost ramping that up? Has that been a direct consequence of, I've got this gap now and I'm that way wired because I am an athlete of that level, that I need something to push myself into on a structured basis?
Yeah, like in January, I signed a pro contract with Hoka, and like, so got some financial support for running, and by all intents and purposes, like, became a professional runner. But I still chose then not to quit. I work freelance in digital marketing. I was like, I'm not going to like get rid of my clients or like quit my job. I was like, I still, not because I need to, but because I enjoy not just thinking about running 24/7. I like having other passions outside of running. I like, you know, doing different things, speaking to clients, going on call, doing whatever. And that means that I'm not just focusing on running all the time. So since I've got injured, I've basically applying the same attitude where it's like, well, what couldn't I do, or what are all the things where I had an excuse that I was away traveling or running, or I couldn't book things in the diary, or I didn't want to expand to a new client or do whatever. I'm like, right, well, I've got an amount of time where I know I've at least got 6 or 9 months where I'm not going to be going to different countries in Europe every week doing a race. Like, what can I productively do with the time? And one big thing, like you mentioned in the YouTube content, one thing that we've wanted to do, myself and Charlie, that I run the channel with for a while, is gradually make it less about Callum Elson and less about me, and more how can we create similar styles of videos and tell short stories, but not just about my story, about other athletes. Yeah. People are equally as different journeys or exciting things or whatever. And we kind of got to the point where we've exhausted kind of like my rise, if you see what I mean, the trajectory I'm on. So again, similar to like when football season got cancelled and it was like, we've now got no choice. It was like, Callum's leg literally doesn't work, so we can't make running videos. We can every so often make like a rehab video, like he's on the bike, he's doing whatever, but that's quickly going to get boring. So how can we just reach out to other people? And to be honest, that's what we've done. We've been like, look, hello, so-and-so, I'm injured right now. We want to make some videos. We've got the resource to do it. It's going to cost you nothing. It'll be good exposure. Let's get you and your sponsors involved, or let's do whatever and kind of make other content. And to be honest, I think that that's when I look back in a couple of years, and hopefully I'm back running at a good level and stuff like that, I think I'll actually be somewhat grateful for, I think we can build a really cool business out of it and actually do something really unique and probably inspire and build a lot more of a community around other people's stories than we ever could about mine. So I think in a way it will actually be a kind of nice silver lining to be like, oh, okay, yeah, it was a shame in the circumstances that it happened, but actually it's helped us grow a channel and do this and do that. So yeah, it's been difficult, and like I'd be doing myself a disservice if I was like, oh, it's been easy, it's been fine, because like people need to know it's normal to be like angry, upset at the situation, like feel like you don't want to train and stuff like that. But equally, keeping busy, it's not for everyone, but for me, keeping busy is like the number one thing to like getting on with stuff and dealing with stuff. So being able to still train a little bit on the bike, still do some stuff in the gym, and then also focus on stuff outside of running is, you know, a nice balance, to be honest.
Yeah, good way to turn a potential negative into something of a positive. And well, on a sidebar, if you're not already one of the, I mean, you've got an awful lot of followers on that YouTube channel now, but if you've not checked out the Distance Project, there is recently a video up with Becky Briggs, who we've had a podcast before as well, which is a wonderful just example of exactly Callum's just said there, that diversification, isn't it, to telling her story.
And, well, this will be out in a couple of weeks, but yeah, in a few days we're releasing the second part with Becky, which is
brilliant.
We had sort of, I can't remember how many, we were all over the course at London Marathon filming her, and she came second Brit as well.
So yeah, she's she had an amazing run. It's good timing to be chatting to her, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, again, just a case of getting lucky where we're like, oh, I think Becky's got, I've known Becky for a while, so I know Becky's got a good story, I think she's doing London, see how it goes, and then she's pulled it out the bag and hopefully it'll go down well now. So yeah, we've got a few different things like that coming out, and like yourself with this podcast, it's nice just to have somewhat of an outlet to be like, kind of just be a bit creative with it. And you know, we're not making any money from it, we cover our expenses on some of the stuff. It's not, you know, ideally one day it'll be a big thing with a big audience, but it's very much an outlet for us to be like, what do we think is valuable, what content would I have liked to consume when I was first getting into the sport, and what would have inspired me during those lockdown times to keep training and doing stuff. So what can we create for other people? And I think we've got some, like, we've got a unique take on it. It's not kind of the traditional vlog, like here's me going to this race content, which I think is nice because there is a lot of that that's fantastic on YouTube. I don't think I'm best placed to start creating stuff like that. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, finding that USP, isn't it? And it certainly feels like you're doing that. Just as we wrap up then, we know that the road to recovery is long. I'm assuming that the focus is back on the track, back in the with 1500 metres, next Olympics 4 years time.
Yeah, I mean, long-term goal, yeah, it'd be fantastic. I'd love to get in a race this year, like by the end of the year, if I can do a little cross country or a little local road race or something, just as kind of like a more from a mental thing of like, it's a nice thing to work towards. But yeah, in terms of elite competition, like ideally try and make some European championships or world championships next year. Like if I can pick up where I left off, hopefully learn a few new things from cross training and stuff like that, then who knows. But if you don't hear from me again, then it's not gone too well.
I'm absolutely positive it will. And then I'm assuming, just to finish us off, as we need to, once we achieve that Olympic dream, which we're definitely going to do in 4 years' time, I think we alluded to it a little bit earlier, maybe a hankering to up the distance, maybe get out in the marathon and move up through the gears there.
Yeah, we'll see. 1500 and 5K is what I want to nail now. And then, if I can do stuff on the road, great. My cross country is pretty good, so it should hopefully translate quite well. But yeah, you can't underestimate stuff like that. I think a lot of people often say, especially when you see the glitz and the glamour and the attention the road running gets at the moment, it's easy to say, oh, I'd love to do a marathon. But completing a marathon and trying to run a world-class marathon is crazy. And I can't, I take my hat off to people, amateur runners of all levels, that get out and do 20 miles on a Saturday just to train to complete London or whatever like that, when they're not getting paid for it, they've got kids at home, they go to work full time, because I'm a runner essentially, and you don't catch me doing 20 miles at the weekend for fun. So yeah, there you go.
Absolutely, we're a strange old breed, aren't we? Listen, Callum, I'm gonna let you get back to your day, mate. Thank you so much for your time. I've had an absolute blast. Time's flown, but I can't believe we've been talking for 40 minutes. If people want to give you a follow, of course they can find the Distance Project. YouTube and Instagram is the best place to track your recovery, I presume, and to see what you're up to in the future. But listen, man, best of luck with the recovery, and let's see you back on that track again as soon as possible, eh?
Thanks a lot, mate, much appreciated. Thanks for having me on.
And once again, an absolutely massive thank you to the incredible Callum Elson. On the road to recovery with big, big things in plan, I'm sure. Do head over and check out the Distance Project on YouTube and give him a follow on Instagram as well. Very, very happy that he found some time to speak to us and very much looking forward to see how he gets on in his recovery. Matthew Taylor, before we finish today, is there something we've forgotten in April?
I don't know, is there? Might be.
Wellity.
I think there might be a little riddle that people might be listening out for.
A riddle, eh?
Absolutely.
Our April Anarchy. Is it April? It's April, isn't it?
It's April.
The April Anarchy edition of the Great Fartlek Scavenge, brought to you, of course, in partnership with the amazing guys at Cooper. We saw Cooper, didn't we, at London at the Expo. You didn't, Max. You weren't there. But me and JP did.
Yeah. I saw some of the YouTube videos and stuff they posted and TikTok videos. I think they went around with the microphone.
They did, and we saw them at Mile 6 as well when they were running around with the microphone. But yeah, we saw the Cooper guys, Pete and Jordan. Big, big thank you there, offering a prize. I do believe it's 6 months membership and a T-shirt, which is very good. It's an awesome little app. And I say it's an awesome little app. We remember them when they were an awesome little app. They're the official running app partner of London Marathon now. So
big.
Thank you for remembering us, Cooper. But in order to be in with a chance of winning this awesome prize from the official running app partner of London Marathon, and thank you so much to them for supporting us. Matt, have you got a riddle for the good people?
Yes, we have. So, what starts with T, ends with a T, and has T in it?
Oh, I stroke my beard, Matthew. Very good. Well, if you know the answer to that one, if you can figure it out, along with, of course, the answers to all the other, well, the evidence, sorry, of all the other scavenger hunt tasks that you've been set in April, then drop us a message. You just reply to the email with all that, and then you get entered into the Cooper Prize draw. But thanks to Cooper once again. And keep your eyes peeled and your ears pricked for May. We've got a brand new partner for the May challenge. So if you've not completed April, but you'd like to get involved in May, then keep your eyes on the socials, because you can enter there. We'll put some a Google form on the old social media, probably when this one goes out, so people have got a couple of days to get added onto it. And that, gentlemen, I think is it, isn't it, till Thursday?
It is.
It's not as funny without Lou, is it? It's just a bit boring. Doing ridiculous things.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're just a... Just a smart
shall do me getting birth to someone.
It's not the same. It's weird when you do it. No, it's good to have you back, Matty. We've missed you, and looking forward to having turning our three-way into a foursome on Thursday, the way it should be. And of course, Ben and Emma will be back as well. Ben has finished his marathon. Will have finished his marathon by the time this episode goes out, and he's going to be talking all about it on Thursday. So we're looking forward to that. We've got our normal chitter chatter and just more community goodness as we motor through series 14. Nothing else to say other than, if you'd like to be part of our Fartlek family, our community, we do have our weekend coming up at the end of May. You're more than welcome to join us. It's in Sheffield. We're taking over Rother Valley Park Run. We're going to be at Glide in Sheffield for an after party. And of course, our annual charity football matches, the men and the women, are going to be on display, I guess. That's not a really good way of saying it. Anyway, they'll be playing. And we'll be announcing our charity partner for the event very, very soon. So keep your eyes open for that one. If you want to be part of the community, just drop us a message, drop us an email, whatthefartlekpodcast@gmail.com, or just drop us a line on the old Instagram. We'd be more than happy to have you along. Everybody is welcome. But until Thursday, when we are back, just make sure your runs continue to be wonderful. Don't forget to be excellent to each other. Be kind or go away. And we'll see you soon. Same fart time, same fart channel. Good energy.